Welcome back to the ACC. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. In fact, Jonesy will be here in mere moments. You know how it is, folks. This is the time I get to take my shots. He's a little bit older. It takes him a little longer to climb the stairs. He'll be with us in a couple of moments as we will take your phone calls until 11 o'clock tonight. 416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. The Raptors tonight knocking off the Detroit Pistons 103-93, the final. You heard from DeMar DeRozan, who led the Raptors with 23 points tonight. And how about the play of Jose Calderon as well? Came into the ballgame averaging over 20 points over his last five games. In fact, I even wrote about it today, cheap plug, at sportsnet590.ca, how he had been on an offensive tear and really helping lift this team offensively over the last couple of weeks in the absence, the continued absence of Andrea Bargnani. But tonight, only one of four, took only four shots, made only one, but 15 assists and just one turnover for Calderon. Double-double for Aaron Gray, who worked his tail off tonight. 12 points, 12 rebounds, couple of block shots. James Johnson with 15 points, 3 rebounds, 3 blocks. And off the bench, Leandro Barbosa, who was shooting in the neighborhood of about 32-33% over the last 8 games, goes 7 of 14 for 17 points in the second unit, and the Raptors get this one without Klaza again, and Bargnani still missing from the lineup. No word yet if Andrea will be ready or not for the first game after the All-Star break, which comes on Tuesday in Houston. 416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Again, your call's coming right up until 11 o'clock. We'll get reaction from the locker rooms coming up a little bit later on as well. And we can talk not only about this ball game tonight, specifically in the victory over the Pistons, but we are officially at the halfway point of the season. The Raptors go into the halfway point at 10-23, 33 games in into the 66-game season, so it is right at the halfway point. And you can assess and or analyze this team at the halfway point. Individual players, the coach, the coaching staff, the team as a whole, the Eastern Conference, the Western Conference, the NBA overall. We can talk about it all on the program this evening. 416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Greg Monroe, as we talked about a little bit downstairs, walked into the fourth quarter with only, I say only, 13 points and 8 rebounds. But in the fourth quarter alone, 17 points, 6 rebounds, and a monster, monster fourth quarter to finish with a game-high 30 to go along with 14 rebounds as well, and a lot of those numbers pad effect 16 times, including 10 in the fourth quarter. He looked impressive tonight, Jonesy, and though he finished with 16 points, as he had a pretty solid fourth as well, scoring 10 of his 16 in the final frame, I was not overly impressed with Brandon Knight. He's not having a bad season. He went for 16 tonight, full credit, but I thought he looked average for three quarters and then kind of came to life in that final frame when Detroit put up 33 points. But listen, I think the guy has a chance to be a star.
Yeah.
A star.
Yeah.
I'm not even just saying good. I think he could be a star. But tonight, I didn't find that he was really opening my eyes a ton over the course of the evening.
He wasn't dynamic tonight. I guess that's the way to look at it. He did a nice job, but I wouldn't categorize his play tonight as dynamic. Not a guy that was all over and, you know, making people better and making teammates better. I mean, you're right, Eric. He put up good numbers, 16 points, you know, 3 assists, didn't turn the ball over, did a decent job, but it wasn't, there was the wow factor wasn't there. You weren't opening your eyes. He didn't make any spectacular moves. I mean, he was solid, and as you said, I think that's a good assessment. He's got a chance to be a real star, but look, he's, what, 35 games in? He's already played a full season at Kentucky, and we're just halfway home.
Well, and the other thing, too, is to be clear, I'm not jumping all over the guy. There was a chance at one point that I think you, me, a lot of people felt he had a great chance to be in a Raptor uniform.
Yeah.
I'm not knocking the guy. You just said it. 35 games in, he's a young player, no doubt about it. But at the same time, Jonesy, I'm just talking about one game, one isolated game, and seeing where he's at, and I just didn't walk away overly impressed. And I thought what you said earlier in the broadcast as well was a good one, in that if we're talking about rookie of the year at this point, it's not, I mean, I don't think Brandon Knight would have been in the conversation anyways, but it certainly wasn't going to be Ricky Rubio, I think, for either one of us. I think if we're talking about Rookie of the Year, then it's going to be a guy like Kyrie Irving.
Absolutely. And the other thing I would say is when you look at Brandon Knight's play and you compare it to the likes of Rubio, Irving, people of that nature, I would say a guy like Kemba Walker, his play is more dynamic right now. I'd probably have to look at and see how they're playing head-to-head and look at all the other stuff involved. But, you know, from what I saw of Kemba Walker the other night against Charlotte, his performance, Walker's performance, was more impressive to me in terms of the eye test than Brandon Knight's was. And that's not to take anything away from Knight. It was the back-to-back. I mean, you know, maybe he's feeling some of that. But, I didn't see his performance as overly dynamic tonight.
416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Again, phone calls right up until 11 o'clock. We've got a bunch of calls lining up right now, Jonesy. And if you want to get in, there are a couple lines open to join the conversation. But one thing before we go to the calls, I wanted to ask you to go a little bit further into what you mentioned downstairs, where you were talking about the Raptors being discussed by some, at least, as a potential, quote, destination for free agents. I'm sure there are a lot of people listening that some were saying, yep, absolutely. Others are saying, what are you talking about? No way, Jonesy, come on. So what is it exactly that you're speaking of, or do you have breaking news or a source or something, Jonesy?
No,
what is it you meant?
Everybody who's in the Twitter sphere has heard it and seen it, the fact that Wilson Chandler was in Toronto and you know, making reference to Toronto. Now, that could be a ploy to drive the price up elsewhere, but I could think of a few more places that he would use other than Toronto, because when you say that and you include that team,
yep,
that team is now looking at you and you're doing the dance. You might stop and have somebody cut in, but you're involved with them, and I think that says something when you look at, and I think it's a key, too, because we've talked about the draft pick. I mean, if the season ended now, Toronto, what, 13th in the East? They're going to get a good pick. It might not be the number one. It might be with the way the lottery balls bounce, but even that pick, Eric, is going to take a couple years. That pick is not going to help you as much in the first year as a good free agent that you spend the money for, a guy who's been in the league. Free agent means he's been in the league 3, 4, 5 years and understands what's going on and is maybe ready to take that next step and kind of explode onto the scene. So those guys are more important, I think, than the draft picks in the short term. I mean, we went through it. LeBron took him 3 years to make the playoffs. Go down the list. The only guy was maybe Carmelo, who, oh, by the way, had Andre Miller and Marcus Camby with him in his first year when he made the playoffs. So, the mid-level free agents are the guys that I think are, well, maybe even more important in the short term to help turn the ship before the franchise really turns when the draft picks come into their own.
And those are the guys, though, and, I mean, everybody knows this, but those are the guys you got to be certain as well that you're not overpaying for. Because if you're not getting the top-tier guys, you got to be conscious and cautious that you're not overpaying for the second, third, fourth tier guys by saying, well, we need to do something. We need to go sign somebody. We've got to spend our money. It's burning a hole in our pocket, and we think we can improve, and yeah, they'll help. But, oh, well, to convince them to come to a 19-win team or a 23-win team or a team that you hope is on the rise, well, instead of maybe getting $4 million from a contender, we're going to have to pay them $6.5 million. You got to really be careful with that, because we use the example. I was talking to Leo Routens about that at the halftime tonight during the interview. That's what I think the Pistons got caught doing when a couple of years ago they felt that maybe they had a couple of young pieces and could they maybe miss out on that rebuild phase by adding a free agent or two and staying at the very least an 8th seed, a 7th seed, and staying in the conversation. And they went out and overspent for Charlie Villanueva and overspent for Ben Gordon. And
they're not producing.
They're not producing. So, thus, luckily, they've still then got two solid top picks in the last 2 years in Monroe and in Knight. But the money that you've given to Villanueva and Gordon 3 years ago, or 2 years, well, almost 3 years ago, could hurt you in terms of the flexibility or lack thereof in trying to get the right pieces to go around Monroe and Knight to ultimately keep them in town and keep them happy and to build a true contender.
Well, so, it speaks to your decision-making. And we talked about people fitting into salary slots, right? You can't overpay for a guy that is, you know, a $4 million player and give him 7 or 8 because it puts your cap out of whack. It drives the market out of whack in a sense that's around you. And now you've got to overpay a bunch of other people as well. So you've got to be disciplined. And as you said, just because you have the cash in your pocket doesn't mean you go out and spend it frivolously. You've got to make the right decisions.
416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Raptorized John in Toronto. Go ahead, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Yo, my brothers, how are you?
Good,
what's
John?
Up, John?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm kind of, you know, I think that the Tank Nation probably was having a heart attack during this homestand.
Tank Nation probably loved this.
Well, I don't know.
Because in the end, they were competitive games that they actually lost.
Yeah, but I mean, we could have had 3 more wins and we had losses, right? You know?
That's true. They almost pulled their hair out, but in the end, they were growing a fro.
Yeah, that's why I said almost had a heart attack, you know? you know, I'm kind of impressed that, you know, with the team so far, you know, without Andrea, they did very well. I don't know what happened with Charlotte. That was ridiculous. You know, I still can't get over that one, man. Do a little bit on where are they. Where is Charlie? Where is Jamario Moon? Jamario Moon, they still in the league?
Oh, Charlie Villanueva is hurt, and Jamario Moon is not in the league. Last he was seen, he was helping out one of his old coaches and helping work guys out in the NBL, working with the Quebec franchise, not playing, but just sort of helping out almost like as a trainer slash coach. And he wants to be back in the league, and he felt that he was going to have a job. And to be honest with you, and you look around the league and some of the players that are in the NBA, and John, it's good that you actually bring that up because we haven't really talked about that. To me, Jonesy, Jamario Moon, at the very least, is a guy that could be a 10th, 11th player, a versatile swingman who's got a decent wingspan, who can defend, who can at least, you know, throw down the odd dunk and bring some athleticism. That's a guy, when I look at some of the players that are in the league, I think Jamario Moon's as good, if not better, than some of those guys. So I'm surprised he's not in the league, but that speaks to how competitive the league truly is. And when folks start talking about this guy's a stiff and that guy can't play and this guy's got no game, there are 450 jobs. And every year, there are 60 players selected. Now, of those 60, let's randomly say, 35, maybe 40 come into the league? But at the very least, that's a turnover of almost 10% of the league every year.
Yeah. Look.
And that means it's competitive, and if you've got a job, it still says you're one of the 450 best players in the world, at least as far as this being recognized as the top league in the world with the top talent and the top dollars, et cetera, et cetera. So it says something if a guy like Jamario Moon can't even find the filler spot as the 15th guy, let alone actually be in a rotation guy.
Well, and people always say, that guy can't play. Let's get this straight. If you're in the NBA, you can play.
Yep.
I talked with D. Brown, former Raptor and now assistant coach with the Pistons. We had a good talk about Jeremy Lin. He said, I knew about Jeremy Lin. I coached against him in the D-League. Walker Russell Jr., I knew about him from the D-League. If you're in this league, you can play. And what separates guys from being names in the league and bench players is the two T's that Jack Armstrong always talks about. Time on the floor and touches of the ball. That's the only difference. Every guy on an NBA roster can play and just needs to be in the right situation and at the right time. And hey, look at Jeremy Lin. A star is born.
Let's go to Francis in Fort Erie. Go ahead. You're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Thanks for having me, fellas. You know, I'm glad that they won tonight. They're winning games here and there. But I just don't think Colangelo's formula is working for the Raptors. And I'm just wondering, if you think he's doing a great job, fine. But what point of time, how many more years, how many more months do you give him before you say, you know, you're not working out, we're going to have to go another direction?
All right, Francis, appreciate the call. Here's the thing, and Jones, you'll jump in on this as well.
Yeah.
This might be something that we continue on right after 10 o'clock as well. Got a couple of minutes till the update. Francis, I would say this right now. the Raptors as an organization, MLSE, had an opportunity to make a change if they wanted to, going back, what, how many months now? Eight? Whenever the hell the summer was.
Yeah.
10 months, whatever it was. And they opted to extend his contract, knowing that this was likely the plan. We're not going out and making a big splash in the free agent market, whether there's a lockout or not, simply because, well, there's not a whole lot of cash. At the time, DeMar DeRozan was coming off a solid second season, at least a solid second half of his second season. Ed Davis was being talked about as the steal of the draft from last year. You had very serious questions about Bargnani, and you're coming off a top selection in Valanciunas and a top five pick. And ownership, management, whatever, decided, we're going to stick with this guy, and we're going to stick with the plan, knowing what the plan is. Building with a young core, basically breaking it down, trying to find the right pieces, and then looking ahead to the summer of 2012 and or the summer of 2013 when there's money to spend and you're hoping to spend it properly, find the right guys, and start it from there. So at this point, I don't think you can say, if you want to talk about previous years and you don't like what he's done or you like what he's done, you're a fan of his, you're not a fan of it, whatever, but as it stands right now, he's done exactly what he said he would do and what ownership knew he was going to do. And they backed by extending the contract.
Well, look, Francis, here's the thing. They tried the other way. And you know, you say you may not like what's happening, but they tried the other way. They tried the quick fix. First year in, eight new guys, bang, 27-47 wins, division title. And they kept trying to, you know, tweak it and move pieces in and out. And that 47 wins dwindled to 27, or from 47 to 41. And then the next year, coach was fired in 8-9. They missed the playoffs, pieced it together, got Turkoglu, were right there for the playoffs, ended up missing by a game with a couple days left in it. And now, with Bosch gone, it's we're going to do it this way. So, in retrospect, this is the first year. And give Brian Colangelo credit, because he's doing this knowing that he's got, if the reports are correct, 2 years. And the team has an option. So,
well, basically now 1.5. He's halfway
exactly.
through.
Exactly. So what's the timetable, Francis? Next year.
All right. We'll keep talking about this, Francis. And we'll stay on that theme because this is a perfect time to talk about it as well at the halfway point. 416-870-0590. 1-888-666-0590. *590 on your cell. A full hour of phone calls plus reaction from the locker room. Coming up next, we're on the air till 11 o'clock. As the Raptors beat the Pistons tonight, 103-93, it's The Wrap on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to The Wrap on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Paul Jones, Eric Smith with you. Phone lines remain open at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. The Raptors knocking off the Pistons tonight, 103-93. Toronto improving to 10-23 as they go into the All-Star break. And we're going to pick up that conversation a little bit here on Brian Colangelo. And listen, I know that this is one of the great hot-button topics when you talk about the general manager of this team. Heck, if you go into any market covering any sport, it doesn't matter. The GM is always, even from the team that has lost three games all year, the GM is going to be the topic, whether you love him or hate him or whatever. I'll say this. Has everything he's done been a home run? No. Has everything he's done been a strikeout? No. To your point, Jonesy, I don't know if I necessarily agree that this is like year one. In that, you're right the way you break it down, but it shouldn't be that way after the length of time that he's been here. However, where I do cut him some slack, and yeah, I know your counter could be, well, yeah, but that's what he's paid to do, so you can't cut him that slack. And I get that, but hear me out for 1 second. As you said, year one, going from 27 wins up to 47, division title. What are you going to do on that? You going to sit back? Now, hindsight being 2020, yeah, maybe you should have sat back and let that team grow. And we've even heard former players say that in recent years, like maybe we just kind of could have just left it.
And they make one or two changes.
I don't even think that's necessarily a criticism of Colangelo. It's just guys in hindsight to look at it. Maybe we should have just kept it and just kept it together and let it grow. But what are you going to do as a general manager? I'm asking you right now listening. Are you going to sit back and be happy with a division title but getting bounced in the first round? Or are you going to try and make moves to improve the team, to make them better, to hopefully get, at the very least, to the second round, to the conference finals, to an NBA championship, whatever it may be? What are you going to do? You're going to tweak it. You're going to try and get into it. You're going to try and get on board and try and make the moves to improve the club overall.
Yeah, you have to. You have to.
And then when that doesn't work, what are you going to do the next year? You're going to probably start to scramble a little bit and say, all right, whether I should or shouldn't have made those moves last year, I got to make some moves now, because the window of opportunity for me to win with this core that still isn't with my franchise guy is closing. Because I don't know for sure if he's going to stay long-term.
Well,
I
got to win to keep him.
I got to win. So you tweak a little bit more. It doesn't work again. What do you do at that point? Throw your hands up in the air and say, okay, we're just going to blow it up now, trade the franchise guy, trade the cornerstone. Instead of trying to build around him, just move him on, and we're going to start to rebuild at that point. Easier said than done, because A, are you going to get value for your franchise guy at that point? And B, okay, let's say you found a trade for Chris Bosh. Are you getting equal value? Yes. But do you still have to find a move then for Calderon at that point, who's only a year into his $10 million per year? Are you going to be able to find a deal for other guys? You look back to that Turkoglu, Bargnani, Bosh core, those three guys. You want to blame the players. You want to blame individual players. You want to blame the coach or the coaching staff. Point the finger at anybody you want. That team should have been better, and that's
a playoff team.
Now, I don't know if it's a championship contending team. I don't know if it's a team that you can absolutely say, yes, 100% should have got out of the first round. But that was a playoff team. So to look back now and say, well, you shouldn't have traded the pick for Jermaine O'Neal. At hindsight, yeah, Hibbert's turned out to be a hell of a player. With due respect to T.J. Ford, who was just in town, who we both have a lot of time for, I'm not sure that you're losing a ton of sleep over losing T.J. Ford at that time.
Now, based
on the way things have played out, but you did have a good 1-2 punch. But you're trying to surround Bosh. You're trying to build on something. You're trying to move forward.
Because you're trying to keep him, too. That's the other thing.
What happens when Chris Bosh walks? Now, ultimately, he has anyway. But what happens when he walks, even in spite of playoff appearances, because he says, I'm tired of carrying the load. I'm tired of just getting to the first round. I need veteran help. I need more guys around me. I can't just keep looking every year at the draft, at the draft, at the draft. Hey, Hibbert may have been a solid player, but it's taken till this year for him to really come out. 3 years. Would Chris Bosh still be here? Would they have been better? We don't know. You can't say for certain out there in radio land if they would have. I can't say for certain that they wouldn't have. But you can see why the moves were made. You can at least see the thought process behind it. And now, with Bosh making the decision to move on, the hand was forced, where Colangelo and his team have now had to react. Okay, it's a reality now. We do have to build, rebuild, tweak, whatever you want to call it, and he's forced into this. So to sit here on February 22nd and say 6 months into the new contract, that's maybe only 2 years according to the reports, then why would you get rid of the guy? Let the guy have his year and a half at the very least remaining and see if he can build it up again. And if he can't, then you ultimately evaluate him then and decide, do I want to extend or do I want to say, you know what, thanks, but we're moving on. I think you stick with it, and you can see why he's made the moves, and you hope that his – I don't want to go off here, Jonesy. You're like chomping at the bit to get in.
But you hope that
his resume, his history, his clout, his name, his connections still – mean a ton, which I'm sure they will, to GMs and agents and everything else around the league, and he can build this thing up again. And that's the hope at this point, and I'm sure that's the hope that ownership had when ultimately deciding, in spite of the lack of playoff success or playoff appearances, that's why they said, yeah, we're still going to stick with you.
Well, I break it down two ways. There was the first part of his tenure where he made the big change and things went well, and then it was trying to tweak, find the combination to keep it going with Bosh. Once Bosh left, that was last year, this year, and this year happened to be the first year of his new, again, reports, two-year deal. Think about it from his perspective. He's not going for the quick fix again.
Mm-hmm.
Drafting a kid in Valanciunas that is not even here, and they've let him play in Europe to develop, hopefully that will expedite his development when he comes over next year. And when he comes over, there's still going to be an adjustment to a man's game, a different culture, and all of that. So this is like part two. There was part one with the Bosh, and then this is part two without. And last year was one part of it. And this year, is the second part in a sense, because you still have the same issues with the team, but you've got a new coach putting a system in. So you've got to give it time. And there are some people that don't want to hear that, but I'm with you. First 2 years in the playoffs, a down year, and then that Turkaloo Bosch that year, DeRozan's first year, that should have been a playoff team.
Mm-hmm.
And that being said, we've always talked about this. Winning and development of young players are not necessarily things that are congruent. When they're trying to win, they're not worried as much as everybody else is about, well, DeMar's not developing. Forget that. We're trying to. So the kid can develop and do what he wants, or do the jobs that we have him set to do within the framework, but we're trying to win. Just develop those little jobs. Now, when Bosch leaves and it falls apart last year, the development goes to another stage. So I think it's two parts. There was part A, and we're now into part B.
All right, guys, back at Raptor Central, the wireless decided to just drop out. So if you can just let me know where we're heading, we'll go to it right now. Andrew in Mississauga, go ahead. You're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
How you guys doing, Eric and Jones?
Good, Andrew.
What's up, Andrew?
Nothing much. Oh, I just hopefully the Raptors do sign Chandler, because I think he bring another dynamic on defense, that he bring toughness. Also, I just want to know, what kind of player you think he would be on the coach Casey's team? What do you guys think about it?
Thanks for the call, Andrew. I think he's a guy that's going to help them offensively. That's where the biggest challenge is. Offensively, stretching the floor, he can shoot the three. Look, in Mike D'Antoni's system, he was, I keep comparing guys. Jeremy Lin was the Steve Nash. In Mike D'Antoni's system, Wilson Chandler was the Sean Marion, the guy that played kind of out of position as a three-man playing four, stretching the floor, forcing mismatches. He's a guy that can do that. He can score it. And if you're going to play for Dwayne Casey, you better play defense. Look, nobody in the organization is going to comment. I don't think he'd be a bad fit at all.
416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Mike in Toronto, go ahead. You're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
You guys got to help me out here, because, I thought I heard something on the drive home tonight, and I couldn't believe my ears, so I have to call to verify. Are you guys really behind Kyrie Irving for Rookie of the Year? Did I just hear my ears blocked up, or is that what you guys were saying?
Who's your choice, Mike?
Who's your choice?
Come on, are you kidding me, guys?
Who is it?
Who is it?
Of course it's Ricky Rubio, man.
No chance.
No.
Okay, so how many rookies come into the league and lead the league in something? Like Ricky's leading in steals. How many guys do
that? Well, steals is not necessarily a great category. Yeah, it also means, hold on, steals also mean that you gamble. Rubio is also surrounded. I think he's surrounded by a better supporting cast.
Really? Name the players.
Well, let's start with Kevin Love.
Kevin Love is better this year than he was last year?
Yes, he is.
No, he's not. And he's only better because of Rubio.
Well, that's great.
The only reason Nikola Pekovic is good is because of Rubio. Come on, Jones. Are you guys watch enough sports? You guys watch enough basketball to know when a rookie of the year is a guy who changes a team? That team is no different than they were last year when they sucked. They bring Rubio in. All of a sudden, they're 500 in the West, guys. In the West. What's Cleveland? A crappy team last year. They get this Kyrie Irving. You know, it's easy to score 20 points when you're on a crappy team.
Okay, all right. All right, let's switch them.
Chris Bosh is 24 points. Where is it?
Let's switch them. Put Kyrie Irving on Minnesota's team and put Ricky Rubio.
They got a white Kyrie Irving playing in Minnesota. His name is Luke Ridenour. Same kind of guy.
No, I don't think so.
Shoots jumpers and
I don't think so.
Percentages. Oh, come on.
I don't think so.
Are you kidding me? Okay, you know what? I have to point at one stat. One stat alone, and that is the win column. You know what? I put Jeremy Lin above Kyrie Irving. He has made a difference on a team.
I'll give you a stat, too. Rookie of the Year is not one of those categories. In the last maybe 15 years, the MVP's team has had an average winning percentage of around 675. Rookie of the Year, they don't translate. They don't attach it to wins. Damon Stoudemire won Rookie of the Year in Toronto. The team won 21 games. I think they look at the impact that he has. And I'm not saying Rubio's not having a great year. I'm not saying he's not going to get votes. He's going to finish two,
you,
three.
You.
If it
you
was my vote,
if it was you and you are picking for that, your life depended on it. You're picking a point guard, and your choices are Kyrie Irving and Ricky Rubio. You're taking Irving. You're telling me this.
Right now I am because I think he's got a better body.
Well, I hope you're not playing with him because you're not going to touch the ball. I know that.
Well, if I had better players, he might.
Well, and to that point, we got to go, Jonesy, for the 20 sports update in a second here. But let me back you up for a second as well, and I would say this as well to Mike. What you're talking about is what you just made my point right there. Better players. How long have we talked? Insert the old broken record right here. Minnesota has how many top 10 picks on their team? You look at Cleveland right now, and listen, they don't have the win total, but I believe they're 3 wins off Minnesota. You're talking about Rubio, and yeah, I know it's the Western Conference, but you're talking about a 16-17 team, one game below 500 versus a 13-18 team in Cleveland. So we're talking about a 3-win difference, but you're making it out like he's that much better. Who is Kyrie Irving playing with? Who does he have? He's got a 14-year veteran, Antoine Jameson. Varejao's now done for the year. He's got Tristan Thompson coming off the bench. Daniel Booby Gibson, who does he have to play with? In Minnesota, you've been stockpiling top 10, top 5 picks for how long? He doesn't have a Kevin Love in Cleveland. He doesn't even have a freaking Michael Beasley or a Darko Milicic or a Wes Johnson. You're talking about the talent level overall surrounding him, and whether it's East versus West, one team is trying to nose their way into the postseason, and the other team is trying to nose their way into the postseason. And you know what? We do have votes. Every year we usually get votes for 2 or 3 awards, so there's no guarantee that we'll have Rookie of the Year. If Rubio continues on this pace and Irving drops off, I guarantee you I'll vote for Rubio. But if it continues on this pace and it's neck and neck, if the season ended today, yeah, my vote, my ballot that I would send into the NBA would have Irving number one.
Let's talk about the other factor. And we've mentioned.
Let's talk about it after the break. We're already way late. We got to go.
I'm going to talk about the age factor and playing somewhere else.
Let's do it. Age factor and playing somewhere else. Plus, we'll have a special guest joining us as well. When we continue, it's The Wrap on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to The Wrap on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Paul Jones, Eric Smith with you. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590 on your cell. Aaron, Matt, Dave, many more to come as well. Just hang on the line, folks. We're going to be with you in just a couple of minutes, and we're going to continue our conversation about the Raptors, Brian Colangelo, Wilson Chandler, the halfway point for the Raptors, the win tonight over the Pistons, 103-93. We do have a special guest joining us in one moment as well, but you wanted to finish up a point, Jonesy, on Ricky Rubio versus Kyrie Irving and the age and experience and everything
else.
Yeah,
and this is something that a lot of people argue, and people were arguing that, I believe, a while back in the NHL when you had guys coming in from other pro leagues, you know, the Swedish Elite League, the Russian Super League, after playing there, and then coming in to the NHL before they've actually become NHL players. Ricky Rubio's been playing with the national team in Spain while he was in the Beijing Olympics. So for at least, 4 years, we're into another Olympic year. So this guy's been playing pro for 4 or 5 years, and he's got a couple years age-wise on Kyrie Irving. That's the other thing, too. Kyrie Irving's 11, 12 games removed from high school, coming in, playing with men. I think he's doing more with less. So, look, right now, it's not over by any means, but at the midway point, Kyrie Irving gets my vote, my first vote for Rookie of the Year. I'm not saying Rubio doesn't get one. He gets one, but it's not my top vote.
Well, and statistically speaking, Rubio's having a fine year. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the guy is fifth overall in the NBA in assists per game at 8.4. He's number 2 in the league at steals per game in 2.4. But you got a guy that hasn't even turned 20 yet who's shooting as a point guard, averaging a hair under 19 points per game at 19 years old, almost 50% from the floor.
In the man's league.
So what's your trade-off? Rubio's shooting 37, but he's a good distributor. Irving's averaging 5 assists, 3.5 less than Rubio, but he's scoring 8 and a half more points per game at a much better percentage. So what's the trade-off?
To me, Irving has to score for that team to be where they are. Maybe Rubio's percentage isn't down because he's taking tough looks, but hey, when you pass the ball to Kevin Love that's getting 25, 30 points every game, my assist total will be pretty good,
and
too.
And if somebody's arguing that, saying, oh, well, his assist totals are higher and his scoring's low because, well, he's got to distribute the ball. Yeah, because he's got better players to play with. Kyrie Irving's doing what he's doing because he's really got nobody in Cleveland to do with outside of Antoine Jameson as a wily vet. Who else is scoring? Who else is doing any damage in Cleveland? That's why I think, listen, you wouldn't be wrong to vote for Rubio, but it's not as outlandish as some are trying to make it out to be, saying that Kyrie Irving should be getting Rookie of the Year votes right now for having a Cleveland team, albeit in the East compared to the West with Minnesota, on the verge of the postseason, because the win total is only three-game difference, 13 versus 16. The loss column, a little bit of a different story based on the fact that Minnesota has played a few more games. Before we go back to your calls, again, folks, stay there. I will get you on here in the next 5 minutes or so. But a special guest wandering by, we dragged him on the air here because he's involved in yet another big project that's going to be unveiled, I believe, during All-Star Weekend. He's been active in the community here in Toronto, not only when his brother was playing in town with the Toronto Raptors, but even since the Junkyard Dog has left town. Johnny Williams has still been working in Toronto, working with the school board in Toronto, down in Vegas, in Detroit still, all over the map in North America, and very active in a number of community initiatives and programs as well. And he joins us right now here live on The Wrap, Johnny Williams. Good to see you, Johnny.
Hey, good to see you guys. Happy to be back. But, you know, I had to come on the night that the Raptors and the Pistons were playing.
Well, because, as a Detroit guy, we tell the story all the time about were you in the truck?
Yeah,
were you in the truck with Jerome when he drove from Detroit to Toronto?
No, he was waiting for the flight.
I was sitting in the kitchen shaking my head like, what just happened? And this guy was like, I have to be at practice first thing in the morning. He had this thing about being the first one to practice, last one to leave. So he said, hey, I work for the Raptors now. And I said, why don't you just wait until at least the morning? He said, nah, I got to get on the road. Now, I will let you guys in on a little secret. Going back and forth between Detroit and Toronto, I realized that it's snowing right around Sarnia almost every day.
All the day. Yeah. All winter.
So,
yeah.
that you know, infamous snowstorm was like the snowbelt. Well, we won't tell too many people.
Johnny, I have to ask you, you make the move with your brother. I mean,
yes.
Jerome's a Washington, D.C. guy, Georgetown.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Drafted by Detroit, makes the move to Toronto. The perception, your perception of, mm-hmm. quote, Canada,
yes.
and Toronto must have changed greatly having come here with Jerome and seeing what the city's all about.
Well, you know what? We had two awesome parents that prepared us. We traveled a lot. You know, we were exposed. So I think Jerome, as well as my other brother, Joshua, we were really prepared for this game to stretch our comfort zone. And I think sometimes that's the challenge. As players become cultured, as their family becomes cultured, you know, sometimes you learn at the expense of mistakes you made, things you might have said wrong. But we grew up in a diverse city, Washington, D.C., and you come to another diverse city, you know, here in Canada. I just thought it was an awesome place. Jerome, you know, was happy that somebody wanted him. And the way that they embraced Jerome in this city, I think this was probably his biggest market. I was sad to see him go.
We're going to go head back to the phone lines in just a couple of moments. Again, Aaron, Matt, Dave, many more. Make sure you stay there. We're going to get to your calls in just a couple of moments here, and we'll get back to the conversation on the Raptors as they beat the Pistons tonight, 103-93. We'll talk about the halfway point of the season for Toronto as well. We were talking off mic, though, Johnny, as we were pulling you on here. You're involved in yet another program. I know,
yes.
again, you're active very much in terms of the Toronto school board and the children here and down in Vegas as well,
definitely.
Where you make your home, and I believe Jerome does as well. But what's the latest? Because this sounds
like
a very cool venture.
You know, I'm really excited. At the end of this week, I head down to sunny Orlando, and I'm actually helping the fathers and men of professional basketball players to launch their inaugural event, a father's mentoring event. Essentially, they're going to be known as the NBA Dads. But my focus is to help them brand, just as I help Jerome brand the Junkyard Dog and all the social programs, is to take the collective equity of Chris Paul's dad is one of the founding members, Dwight Howard's dad, Jaren Jack, his dad is on the committee. So you got a lot of different dads that are coming together, some stepping back in sons' lives, but at the end of the day, we can do a lot with these powerful men and raising other fathers, and just looking at how we can move things forward and leverage this game and the fan base that watches this game and all the young people that look up to these players. I think by focusing in on fatherhood, I think it's a critical issue. We, you know, most athletes are known for saying hi mom, but we rarely ever hear them say hi dad.
Right.
Take care of mom, but not take care of dad. Right. So what we're looking at doing is flipping that on its head. We got to put the leaders of households back in place. It's great for us to be these tall gentlemen to stand out, but we got to get men to stand back up and reengage with their sons, you know, and that's one of the things we want to do, create Toronto dads, New York dads, Chicago dads, you know, a network of fathers stepping back in their kids' lives and doing what's necessary. Because as a speaker out here, I can tell you most of society's ills, from prison to dropouts to teen pregnancy, is all anchored around fatherhood. And that's just something that, you know, we need to address.
How much of this, especially, and you know, we've talked about this a lot over the years, Jonesy, as well. How much of this plays into, especially in the basketball culture for a lot of communities, a lot of markets, when it comes to, and you know, I'm not trying to play the race card, but it's out there. The fact that for a lot of African-American youths and young men, it's growing up in a single-parent mother being the single-parent home where there are a lot of absentee, or, you know, some people want to say deadbeat dads.
You know,
versus putting the profile on those dads that actually are doing the positive things and are part of these guys' lives.
This is the critical piece. Because there are fathers that I've already spoken to that have sons that they re-engage with. Of course, it's easy to re-engage with a child that makes it big.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, they still had to humble themselves to step back into a child's life or a grown man's life. And that's where the whole notion of raising fathers comes in, is if these men can do it, maybe they can create a pathway, a pattern, and a path for other fathers to do it as well. Because children don't get here just by way of a mother. We're not hatching kids.
Yeah.
It takes two to make one. So at the end of the day, it takes two to raise one. So we got to get these fathers back into play. I'm sorry, did I hit a chord? I'm sorry.
Hit a nerve with our live audience. Look, okay. I'll say this as a guy who used to run a school and a principal. We've had Johnny into our school when I was at Roselawn Public School in the York Region system. And Johnny came in, and his message is terrific. He has a great way with the kids, having them understand the message, not just, you know, the histrionics and the drama and the presentation, not just the sizzle, but the steak is well cooked. And there's a message in there. And, Johnny, it's great to see that you're back with my man Chris Spence and the TDSB and doing great things. And hopefully it'll mushroom from Toronto and grow throughout the GTA, whether it be into York Region or Durham or out towards, you know, Peel or Halton or towards Hamilton, because the message is great. And I can say this as a principal too. We often talk to the moms.
Yes.
I phone home, I talk to mom, because sometimes there is no dad. And I know that in our household, when it's parents' night, I'm a dad and I'm in there, because I want them to know that I'm part of this too.
Exactly.
Johnny,
exactly.
Appreciate you stopping by. Make sure you keep in touch and let us know how things go over the weekend and then moving forward as well.
All right.
Good to see you, man.
To you guys. Good to see you also.
There is Johnny Williams. Let's see if we can grab one more, folks, just before we quickly go to the break. We'll try and squeeze one in with Aaron in Richmond Hill. Go ahead. You're on the wrap.
How's it going?
Good, Aaron.
Good, Aaron.
Okay, I just wanted to comment on the question that Eric posed a little earlier in the show in regards to Brian Colangelo, and as to if we were the general manager, what would we have done in year one? Whether or not, like, keep the team steady, let them build from there, or to switch it up like he did. And I just want to say that you obviously had to switch it up, because no other team in the Atlantic Division, let alone the rest of the league, is keeping their team steady, right? They're always changing and adapting to become a better team. So if we kept the team steady, then the other teams would have been ready and had something new and something fresh to take us down in the Atlantic Division and Eastern Conference and the rest of the league, right? So I think that, you know, like what Eric said, Brian Colangelo did the right thing in changing up the team. And, you know, if he didn't, then we probably still would have gone down at the Atlantic Division, because other teams would have known what to expect.
All right, Aaron, appreciate the phone call. And we'll address that and other comments on Colangelo and the Raptors, no doubt, when we continue. Matt, Dave, Jim, Brian, you're all coming up. 416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. We're going right back to the calls as soon as we return from the 40 Sports Update. It's the wrap on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to the wrap on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Paul Jones, Eric Smith with you. A lot of callers have been very patient. We want to get right to it. The Raptors knocking off the Pistons tonight, 103-93. And like I said, a lot of guys being patient, including our next call. And thank you for holding on. Dave in Toronto, go ahead. You're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hey, guys.
What's up, Dave?
I'm a season ticket holder, and I'm fully committed to the proper rebuild process we finally have underway in Toronto. Guys that I talk to in my shoes also believe that we're in the same place, and I think they're very fine with what's going on. I trust Colangelo to get it done and believe his thought process has made a lot more sense over time. You know, these things don't always work out. But I think, to your guys' earlier point, he made some interesting calls. Jermaine O'Neal didn't work out, but his thought process can't really be faulted. And I think he's done a pretty good job in his staff at drafting at the spots that they've had. I'm tired of hoping for middling success in Toronto and not believing we can ever win a real championship here. We tried it in the Carter era. We tried it in the Bosch era. And neither of those max money guys had the character or the guts to get us even close. We are finally, for the first time in years, moving in the right direction to eventually actually win something here. I think we've got a new culture of accountability and work ethic. I think Dwayne Casey is a big part of it. We're young. We've got pieces. We've got huge cap space. And most importantly, we finally have a chance at not just one, but two top picks to join us in 1 year. That would be Valanciunas and hopefully a really high first-round draft pick this coming year. If we screw that up and we go after a Wilson Chandler and we make a middling kind of success run to finish ninth and we blow that process, I am out. I am no longer part of the season ticket holder base at MLSE. Just want your thoughts on that.
Dave, let me just ask you quickly before you hang up there. Yeah. Based on I was hearing you and agreeing with you all the way right up until the end, and not that I'm disagreeing, but I just want you to clarify so I have it right. You're buying into everything, and you see the future, and you're talking about Valanciunas in the next pick. Now, you made the Chandler comment and then said if we screw that up and make a run and only get to ninth. So are you part of, you know, it's become known as Tank Nation in a sense, or as a season seed holder, do you still like to go and see a win tonight over the Pistons, a win that should have come against Charlotte? Heck, wins that could have easily come against L.A., against New York, or do you prefer to see them lose and prefer to see them not at 10-23 but at 8-25 right now?
Well, I do prefer them to lose this year, and I have to admit it's selfish because I get to pay for less games because of the shortened season.
That's true. Hey, we're season seed holders too. And we said before, Dave, we're the radio guys. We pay. The TV guys might have other deals, but we pay. So we're both season seed holders too, so we hear you.
Right, but if I look at San Antonio and when Robinson was injured, and, you know, I'm not going to say that Bargnani is Robinson, but without Bargnani,
I hear you. Dave, I hear you.
Injured, and they picked up Tim Duncan.
Yep.
They were set for a decade, and they still are.
Yep.
And
now,
that's what this city needs.
Yeah, I don't know if they're – great point, Dave, and thanks for the call, man. I don't know if there's a Tim Duncan like that in this draft, but at the same time, I do think that whether it be Wilson Chandler or not, the one, I would hope, free agents that you can spend the money on are character guys that will fit Dwayne Casey's system. They do their proper due diligence and get two guys that help the franchise move forward. And the picks are great. Valanciunas is, you know, he looks like he's going to be a guy that's very good. And then you get somebody else this year, but it's going to take those guys a little time to develop. Hopefully you're finding two free agents that aren't going to break the bank, that you convince to come here, that will help the team move forward, that have been in the league for 4 or 5 years and understand what the league's about. So I hear you, Dave. I hear where you're coming from. And I, too, agree with the fact that this thing is going in the right direction. Don't look at, you know, the quantifiable numbers. Look at the qualitative stuff, as you said, around the culture and the people and all of those things. Great, great call.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. And to be clear, for those that maybe were just tuning in or haven't been reading over the course of the day, the tweets, the blogs, and everything else, there was talk. Well, not talk. I mean, it was proof. People saw him. Wilson Chandler was in town today, and that obviously fed the rumor mill in terms of why he was here and whether he's actually close to signing a deal or at least just exploring conversations. Is he simply just visiting and enjoying town? Is he trying to use the Raptors as leverage against the Denver Nuggets? Who knows at this point? If the Raptors were to make a move, for what it's worth, they would have to make a roster move to accommodate the signing as well, in that they have 15 players under contract right now. So somebody would have to be waived, cut, whatever, in order to accommodate Chandler if they were to go in that direction. Let's go to Tommy in Mississauga on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hi, I was just saying that with the Raptors, we had gone a lot through a lot the last couple years, and I was just thinking that the guy who had talked before me was right with regards to the whole rebuilding process, and also I was saying that maybe we should pick up another point guard, a stronger point guard, and get Jose Calderon off the bench and have somebody work with him and have more of a leadership, where as getting us to the finals, like picking up a guy like Anthony Carter, who really doesn't have the championship experience and the leadership in his career, and maybe someone else that we could get to do that, like if we had kept TJ Ford, but that's in the past now. But a guy like that could have helped our rebuilding process with Valanciunas and DeMar DeRozan at the two.
All right, hey, thanks for the call. Look, I'll say this. I like the vets that were brought in this year. They may not be, you know, highly productive, but they're character people, and they're good for the young guys. A guy like Jamal McGlure, Anthony Carter, you mentioned some of those names, Rasul Butler. These guys have been around the block. They've been in this league, right? They know what it takes. They've been on good teams. Hey, Jamal McGlure is an all-star. I mean, so they can talk to...
Oh, he's been hanging in Miami the last couple of years with some of the biggest names in the game.
They can talk to DeMar and James Johnson and these guys to teach them what it takes. And these are things, again, we talk about it that you don't see. Eric and I get on the plane with this team. Jamal McGlure gets on the plane in a suit. And people might say, well, what's the big deal? Well, hey, wait a minute. In this era where guys are, you know, the casual dress is okay and, you know, a pair of nice slacks. And, hey, man, my guy's wearing a jacket and a tie.
Even for a five-plus hour
Thank
flight
you.
To the West Coast.
Thank you. And that, to me, that's...
He was in a suit with a shirt and tie. I wasn't in a suit.
I took my tie off. Exactly. But that, I mean, that's part of professionalism. He gets his work done. He's talking to the young guys. He's up off the bench. He's almost like a playing assistant coach at times. So I like the vets that they brought in that way with, you know, Rasul Butler, Anthony Carter. I like what they're doing for these young guys because it holds more weight when the guy's wearing a uniform. If Anthony Carter was wearing a suit as a coach or a guy who is on IR or whatever or inactive all the time, doesn't hold as much weight. He can be in their ear that way.
So maybe they need to put the coaches in uniforms like in baseball.
Oh, no. Well, look, I'll say this. Huh? For the most
Dwayne
part.
Dwayne Casey on the sideline, shorts and a jersey.
Dwayne Casey's in shape. He'd look good in a uniform. There are some cats. I don't know if I'd want to see Stan Van Gundy rocking a pair of long shorts and some black socks
just
over the
ankle. What
about
George Karl with the turtleneck and the shirt over top from a couple of years back? Hey, at least he was trying, right?
Yeah, yeah.
At least he did, and the thing came down to his knees. Alex and Barry are on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hi, guys. Thanks so much for taking the call again.
You're welcome, Alex.
Thank you. I was just listening to one caller prior to the last gentleman. His name was Dave. I believe he was a season ticket holder. And I think that he raised a very, very valid point. That being said, the way that I see this season playing out, especially the way that Calderon is playing, which has been fantastic, I see us again playing out anywhere between that 11th to 8th seed and perhaps risking that very high draft pick. Now, what I wanted to ask you guys just to get your thoughts, do you think it might be best to move Calderon prior to the deadline, which in that case I think our front court looks great with Amir, with Ed, Andrea, and Valanciunas coming over soon. I think DeRozan has the 2 spot. I think if we can get Calderon out for a very athletic 3-man and still have the cap space to work with in the offseason, I mean, that might indeed tank us just because of the way that he's been playing so great as of late. But it might, in the long run, kind of guarantee us that top 10, hopefully top 5 pick. Thank you so much for taking a call, guys, and I'll listen. Thanks,
Alex.
Thanks, Alex. Look, I'll say this. I'm always on the winning train. It's never a bad thing to win. And do you move Calderon? People forget. He was traded last year. He was gone to Charlotte. So
yep.
I won't be surprised if a contender comes calling and says, give us Jose Calderon, we'll give you, and the pieces fit coming back. Fine. I mean, that's the way the game goes. I'm not intentionally looking to dump his salary or get rid of him because he's also providing pretty good, you know, leadership. He's the best point guard they have right now in terms of running the club. So you just have to see what offers are out there. I'm not against it, and I'm not advocating it. Just move forward and see what comes your way. I don't know if you want to get rid of him just for the sole purpose of losing more games or trying to develop somebody else, because as much as people talk about it, these guys live it. They're in that locker room. They feel the losses. As much as, you know, people want to look forward to next year in a high pick, hey, man, these guys feel the losses, and they're out there competing, and they're not thrilled about just dropping games and, oh, we'll get a draft pick next year.
All right, we heard from DeMar DeRozan on our postgame show. We chatted with him after the ballgame, but another guy who had a big, big evening this evening was Aaron Gray. He had the first double-double of the year, 12 points, 12 rebounds, had a couple of assists and two block shots as well. So to close out the show, let's hear from the big man, Aaron Gray.
MVP. I don't know what to do with my hands.
That's a next Matt Geiger right there. MVP.
Mine would be bigger than most. I don't know. Silly teammates, man. It's good to win, though.
Catch off guard a little bit.
It's just exciting to win. We didn't finish quite as well as we wanted to, but to win this game, going into All-Star break, it's definitely gonna make the rest feel a lot better. Yeah, I think the 4 days really helped us. I think we got a lot of good days of practicing, and we got some rest. Guys got healthy. Came out with a lot of energy tonight. Really executed the game plan well. Teammates really stepped up, and it's just good, like I said, to win. Yeah, no, great player. Experienced. When I was at Pitt, he was at Georgetown, so it was good to see him out there doing well. But obviously, I'm glad the Raptors did better. it is what it is. It was fun. It was exciting. It was in the game. Really had the emotions going, but like I said, we just got to put some things together and have a good second half of the season.
Your best value may be setting screens. What goes into setting a good screen?
Just being physical, not being afraid of contact. Obviously I'm not the quickest guy or the fastest or jumps the highest, but I definitely don't want to, not afraid to hit somebody. So I'll just get in front of somebody's way, and it really makes me happy getting all the guys open.
There is Aaron Gray again, 12 points, 12 rebounds, 2 blocks, 2 assists. The Raptors tonight beating the Pistons 103-93 at the official halfway point of the season, 10-23. Next action coming next Tuesday when Toronto was in Houston to face the Rockets, then in New Orleans to face the Hornets on the back-to-back on Wednesday night. So the Raptors with 6 days off over the course of All-Star weekend before they're in action again on Tuesday after the break. Thanks to Joe, Igor, Tom Young, who's now heading down to Florida to do the baseball thing, Aston Duport, and Len Gremanopoulos. For Paul Jones, I'm Eric Smith. It's been The Wrap on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.